Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Julie Douglas.
And on this podcast, we discuss a lot of topics that get down to the heart of what we are. Mm-hmm. What are we as human beings? And who is the we in that sentence? Who is the I in any given sentence? You know, we do a lot of navel gazing, and we have a nice navel gazily topic for you today, because it does get down to the heart of what are we? What are we really? And if the hypothesis that we're looking at in this episode hold true, the answer is far different than what we have thought even in the very recent past.
Yeah, because we have talked about the role of the microbiota in the past here, but now we're going to talk about something called the hologenome, actually just hologenome, that furthers this idea that we are all just sort of like skin wrappers and there's a bunch going on that determines our biological and in some ways our mental fates. And it's not just genes here, so that's the big story with the hologenome.
Yes, and that skin wrapper description is pretty accurate because when you get down to the cells in our body, the genes in our body, it all adds up to about 10% of us.
Yeah, because we're outnumbered 10 to 1 by these bacterial cells. So there's so much more going on at the surface and below. And in fact, there's this idea that evolution itself may be driven by bacteria.
Which would make sense. I mean, just on a very basic level, because again, 10%, only 10% of us is us. And that's a ridiculous sentence to make, because then as we evolve, then surely, I mean, that other 90% has at least some sort of voting rights. If not equal voting rights, then at least some sort of voting rights. It would just stand to reason, right?
It would stand to reason, but let's talk about what the microbiome, which is made up of all these differing bacteria, has been up to and do a quick little recap of the microbiome project. This was funded by the National Institute of Health. We're talking about 200 scientists, 80 institutions around the world, that sequenced the genetic material of bacteria taken from 250 people, 11,000 samples that came out of this. And what we found out is that each human contains up to 8 million bacterial genes in contrast to just 22,000 human genes. So again, outnumbered. And this is according to Michael Pollan in his article, Some of My Best Friends Are Germs. He said that bacteria can swap genes and pieces of DNA with itself. This is so crazy to me. Mm-hmm. He says it's an incredibly important adaptation that allows a microbiota, which could be exposed to a toxin or a new food, to swiftly come up with precisely the right genes needed to fight something or eat it. So you've talked about this actually a lot in the past, that the gut bacteria, you know, without it, we just couldn't exist. It's right. Breaking down food for us. It's allowing us to get the nutrients out of it and also to take the stuff that's a little dicey and jettison it.
Yeah, at the very least, we have an extremely symbiotic relationship with all of this bacteria.
Mm-hmm.
That in the same way that that we depend on fire and cooking to externalize part of our digestion, we've also in effect brought in outside workers to help with the digestion of the food. So it's it has this huge effect on our ability to actually consume the nutrients we need to survive.
Yeah, and we also have talked about how newborns are slathered in a new sort of microbiome for themselves via vaginal births.
Mm-hmm.
But it turns out that the bacterial life of newborns are actually seeded before they're even ejected out into the world.
Wow, so even before they get to go through the birth canal and just pick up all these new and exciting bacteria and
mm-hmm.
become a part of who they are already, to use like a prior way of looking at it, you would say they're already infected. They're already tainted by the bacteria. But
right.
But as we're discussing in this episode, it's wrong to even think of it in terms of a taint or a staining of the individual, because there isn't really this pure, pristine
yeah.
individual. And, I mean, you can do that. You can remove the microbiota from an individual member of a species, from an individual organism, but with often dire results.
Right. I think the old view in the past was that any sort of bacteria was bad, but
yeah.
now we've come
Sweep
to this better understanding
yeah.
of it. And it is really interesting to know that a fetus is being seeded via the placenta or the cord blood,
mm-hmm.
Because, you know, that gives us this idea that you cannot be separate from it. You cannot be this pristine individual who is born completely germ-free, that this is part and parcel of us. In fact, Joseph knew, he is a University of Florida pediatrician. He actually examined the first stools out of infants that were just born and found that, yes, indeed, their guts had been active and had been seeded to create all these different bacteria that he found in their stools. And he said that we might provide mothers with a microbial cocktail. This is his idea, that it's so important that we may be able in the future to give mothers who are gestating some sort of microbial cocktail that would really help to ensure that that infant was born with the optimal bacterial profile.
Wow. Yeah. I keep coming back in my mind as I'm reading about this topic to a new ship constructed in a shipyard. And then when it's time to put that ship out to sea, you can't just slide it out and let it float off to nowhere. It's got to have a crew. It has to have individuals aboard the ship to make it function, to make it seaworthy. And then over time, of course, you're going to have rats and stowaways living on it as well, or you know, luxurious passengers who don't actually contribute to the overall health of the ship,
mm-hmm.
At least in any way that you know, the people shoveling coal would understand. But certainly you have to have at least a skeleton crew when it rolls out into the water.
I like that. I like that idea that I've got a crew inside of me right
yeah.
now.
Yeah, it's like you were the Starship Julie, and you have a certain microbacterial crew that is, in effect, kind of running the show. I mean, with some certain, you know, it's like the Star Trek Enterprise. There's a computer system that's doing other stuff. You have the genes. You have the cells.
Yeah.
But then you have also this rich, diverse alien crew that is making everything function at optimal levels.
I was thinking more like I was a rap star.
Okay.
With my
oh,
crew.
Yeah, with your crew, like rolling in with your crew.
I was rolling
yeah.
with my crew.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's good. That's good, too.
All right, so how could bacteria inform evolution? Well, let's take a quick break, and when we get back, we will dive into that.
Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astepro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astepro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astepro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astepro. Go to AstaproAllergy.com for a discount so you can get Astepro and go today. AstaproAllergy.com. Astepro and go. Use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles in a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a Gagillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
All right, we're back.
We are, and we are going to talk about the case of the parasitic wasp. In order to get into this material about gut bacteria specifically and how it might be driving speciation. But first, speciation.
Yes, we're talking about the process by which new species evolve. Now, we've all seen trees of different organisms branching out. You have one life form, and then it ends up diverting into two separate life forms, and they stem from each other, and it becomes this grand tree of evolution spreading across millions of years. But how does that breakup occur? How does that divide happen between this species and that?
Yeah, and that's what we're going to get into. And what we are talking about is a particular species that developed different genetic characteristics to the point where they cannot mate with the original species and produce a fertile offspring. So a good example of this are horses and donkeys, right?
Yes.
They descended from a common ancestor, but their genetic makeup diverged, and their offspring, a mule, is infertile. So why talk about Nessonia wasps? Well, it turns out that there are four very closely related species in it. And when these species interbreed, they make what's called a hybrid. And sometimes these hybrids die. So the question becomes, why do hybrids die between closely related species?
Yeah.
And to try to answer this, Seth Bordenstein, he's a co-author of research on microbiota and speciation, looked at these wasps and tested a hypothesis that a new species of animal can arise through changes in gut bacteria or the gut microbiome, which is an amazing sort of new lens to look at this whole idea of evolution.
Yeah, like his breakthrough here was that if you remove the microbiome from the equation with these wasps, then the hybrid offspring will survive. to a certain extent, as opposed to just being doomed from the get-go. So it's showing that it's not just the genetics at play. It's also the microbiomes of each species. So even though they're, it's kind of like with two individuals. It's like, well, they're physically compatible, but then they have no emotional compatibility, you know, et cetera. There, you know, any number of examples you can make up with people where on one level everything lines up, but on another more important level, they don't. And in here for these two species to really successfully breed and produce a viable offspring, not only do the genetics have to be at least interlockable, but also the microbiome.
Which is, you know, pretty big news.
Yeah, because we're talking about the diet. Yeah. We're talking about the crew that occupies the ship. And and you can't necessarily combine the crews without there being a lot of unrest. I think there's a whole Battlestar Galactica episode about that.
I think so. Yeah. And, you know, let's talk about crews rolling, too. You all right?
You know,
one crew rolling against another.
Exactly. There's gonna be unrest. There's gonna be mischief.
All right. So this leads to this idea of the hologenome. So what is the hologenome? It's basically made up of, within the organism, a cell's mitochondria, the cell's DNA, along with microbiota. And Richard Jefferson and Eugene Rosenberg, they came up with a description of this theory. And Rosenberg actually stumbled upon a 1989 paper by Diane Dodd. She was then a postdoc at Yale University. And she found that changing the diet of a fruit fly could alter the fly's mating choices after just two generations, which made Rosenberg kind of scratch his head and wonder if he could do the same thing in his lab.
Yeah, so basically his findings were that if you take this single species, you split them into two different populations, you give them each an individual diet, then the microbiome is going to change. And eventually these individuals are going to, they're going to no longer be compatible with each other.
Yeah, that's right. What they did is they took the single species that they split and they gave them the two different diets. They brought them back together and they found that they would not mate with each other.
Yes.
Because they then had different gut microbiomes. So that brings up this question of, like, you know, as a vegetarian, if I start eating Big Macs, is my husband going to back away from me?
Because you are both vegetarians.
We were both vegetarians.
Okay.
If I change my gut bacteria and I don't tell him, let's just say, let's throw that in the mix. For a week, I eat this, I don't tell him, my gut microbiome changes. Will he begin to sort of find excuses, you know, to get out of the house, around?
I have a feeling that if you eat like a Big Mac a day for a week after being a vegetarian all this time, he's going to know because your body is going to going to let everyone know that there's a problem.
Well, it's true. I think that there would be some really big signs, and I won't go into what those signs might be. But Seth Bordenstein was faced with this very same question: what if humans did this? Would the same sort of thing happen? And he said, well, probably not. But we do know that microbes affect the way we smell, and if individuals choose to date or find the partners based on their smell, then that is a form of discrimination that's occurring. If it happens to the population or species level, then new species will be arising. So while anything is possible in biology, I doubt that humans will be splitting into different species.
Yeah, because, I mean, the other thing is that humans have a lot of additional complexity layered on top of their smell-related choices. So they're not just going to necessarily be like, oh, well, she's really interesting and I'm very attracted to her, but, she eats a little more garlic than I would like. Or I'm a true vegetarian and she's a, what is it if you're a vegetarian but you eat eggs?
You're ovo-lacto vegetarian.
Like, I guess.
Or you're not vegan.
Yeah. I guess, you know, I can imagine that there are varying degrees to which people are hardcore enough about their diet to where it would be a problem. But, I mean, I know one person who is, you know, pretty hardcore vegan, and her husband's not, and they seem to get along fine.
It happens. Yeah. You're right. So there are examples.
Yeah. And they have a child, so they're not like two different species, and they can actually breed. So there you go.
It's true. All right. So, yeah, with humans, it's not acting on us at that level, but it's fascinating to see these flies, essentially the same species, diverging from each other just based on the gut bacteria.
Now, of course, we should mention hologenome theory is a theory, and it's one that people like to fight about, especially with evolutionary biologists who are not necessarily on board in all cases with this theory, with this new way of looking, because evolutionary theory is all about competition. Survival of the fittest, right? And we'll have more on that in a minute, but the reason I mention it here is that I was looking at a study involving killer whales, and this is a study that was conducted by Andrew Foote, an evolutionary biologist at the University of Copenhagen. Now, why is he looking at killer whales? Because he's interested in sympathetic speciation. Okay. Now, this is the idea that you have the speciation we're talking about, mm-hmm. where two, you have one particular organism, one species, and over time it diverges into two. And killer whales have been of particular interest to people because of sympathetic speciation. This is occurring without a geographic barrier. They're in the same area, but there you have just two different groups of the same species mm-hmm. engaging in different diets and then different behaviors to pursue that particular prey animal. And then eventually the argument is they're going to become two different species. And we see that to a certain extent happening already with killer whale populations in the North Pacific and Antarctic, where you have multiple genetically distinct populations. They haven't been formally described as separate species, but they have different prey preferences. Mm-hmm. So one group, one pack of killer whales, they are mammal eaters. They're eating the seals, and that's all they eat. So they have specific patterns for hunting those seals that they pass down. And then you have another group that eat fish, and they have specific patterns for pursuing those prey. And these two packs do not intermingle, and they have different way. Their communication is even a little different. So they're arguably well on their way to becoming two different species. So it's a possible example of this whole genome effect on speciation.
Yeah, it's interesting that you bring that up because it does kind of mix sort of our more traditional views of speciation, mm-hmm. which sometimes have to do with populations being isolated or not being isolated or just geographically in different areas and how that might affect the species.
And then
you have the diet in that mix as well.
Yeah. Now, I just want to mention this is a 2013 study, just from August, and Foot, again, is an evolutionary biologist, so he's not pursuing this, this whole genome theory as an explanation for what's
right.
happening with the killer whales, but I feel like that's a very strong possibility here, because we're looking at diet affect speciation, in a given population.
Yeah, so that makes a very interesting case there. Well, let's take another quick break, and when we get back, we are going to look more at the criticism leveled here at the whole genome theory and how it might or might not square with evolution.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left, look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
All right, we're back. Again, we're talking about the hologenome. We're talking about looking at the aggregate genome of an organism. We're looking at cells, mitochondria, cells, DNA, microbiome, all of it together in the to basically constitute the total genome of a particular organism.
Yeah, in the hologenome, again, this is a very new concept. Mm-hmm. You know, Jefferson, Rosenberg, and to some degree, Diane Dodd, they all contributed to this idea. Then you have Seth Bordenstein really sort of trying to run with it a bit more. And I did want to point out that Seth Bordenstein really engages people on this topic quite a bit. He does this through his blog, which is called Symbiontism. And he also does it through his Twitter feed. And
hashtag hologenome.
Hashtag hologenome, of course. And I did want to read a couple of things that he wrote. Someone said, I'm not getting how hologenome is different than co-evolution systems with correlated inheritance, i.e. body lice. And his explanation was because you can live without parasites like lice, but you can't live without your microbiome. So again, he's making the case that this is part and parcel of the sort of operating system that we have. And just think back to Michael Pollan's example of how some bacteria can swap DNA mm-hmm. to respond to the environment.
Yeah, again, the ship runs just fine without the rats, not so much without the crew.
Yeah, and, you know, I was thinking about this paired with epigenetics, and I will not get into that, but, you know, that's that idea that you have this extra bit of information glommed on to your DNA, and, you know, depending on what's going on with the person's immune system or their external conditions, yeah. like famine, for instance.
Yeah, environment, their situation, flipping on or off individual genes.
Right. We're talking about generations yeah. after that are actually affected by that person's experience. So nothing is cut and dried here. So back to evolution, you know, for us, that has always seemed, you know, fairly straightforward at this point. We're talking about variation, selection, and heredity, but now you do have this bacterial component, or perhaps we have it. And I wanted to just mention that there's one other little layer here in the example of mice and how their brains develop. And this is a 2011 experiment that showed that mice need their gut flora for the brain to really develop normally, because germ-free mice with no microbiota, ones that were removed, showed severe deformities in their brain structure. And that indicates that the brain and the nervous system is dependent upon this proper gut microbiota being in place.
Yeah, and that is obviously huge, because a lot of what we've talked about in the past, just on the show, and a lot mm-hmm. of the information that's generally out there, you know, it's easy to get behind the idea, oh, well, your gut bacteria, it's good for you. It's good to have. It's good to have around, because it'll help you digest. It'll
eat
help
some
you
yogurt.
Do this. Yeah. Yeah, you know, you go on some antibiotics for a UTI, and then you end up taking a bunch of probiotics to sort of balance the ship again. But here we're seeing, you know, examples of severe brain deformities. So obviously it's not just a matter of it's good to have, it's necessary to have, at least in mice.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. And then the question is, to what extent does that, you know, inform other species
right.
Of how their brains and their gut bacteria work in tandem? So again, this gives us the idea that genes are not the blueprint that we thought they were in the past. And this is from Science 2.0, Gerhard Adam. He said, whatever else we may think, it is clear that viewing an organism and natural selection from the pure perspective of genes is incomplete. Therefore, it may be more precise to say that genes provide the basic environment while microbes manipulate and refine to produce a working ecosystem. As a result, as goes their success, so goes ours.
Crew on a ship.
Yep. Crew Once on again. The ship. But then you have someone like Andy Gardner of the University of Oxford, and he sort of counterpoints this by saying, I would be less inclined to bundle all these cells together as a single integrated organism. And this is an excellent point, because sometimes the microbial cells will be doing things that aren't good for the host.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we see microbes in a new light, in which we see them in a more beneficial light. But it is true that disease and illness are a result of bad bacteria. Not to call them bad or good, but, you know.
Yeah, but of course the same thing can be said about genes. That can be said about,
yes.
You know, immune functions. It's a complicated ship, and there's a lot that can go wrong, both in the hardware of the ship and in the crew members, the stowaways, the rats, etc.
Yeah, and again, here we have Bordenstein saying, look, I don't know about this hologenome yet, basically. He's saying dogma and linear thinking, it could also be wrong, but a hypothesis is not wrong until tested. So it's out there. It's out there for people's consideration. Is it going to become the sort of, you know, unified theory of everything for the human body? We don't know, but I think it definitely adds to the whole conversation of how our bodies are actually responding to their environments, to their genetics, to what we put in them.
Yeah, and that's really what these guys are pushing with the whole genome thing. And they're not saying, all right, we have it. Here's the answer to everything. They're saying, we think there's something to this. We think this is a really important theory. We want other people to explore this in regards to other organisms, other species, and, of course, the human body itself.
You know, I am participating in the U-Biome. This is the Citizen Science Project.
Mm-hmm.
And this week I am shipping off my microbiota samples.
Oh.
I can't wait. Going to get it back. Going to find out what my crew is doing there.
Excellent.
Yeah.
In an envelope? Is it just like a manila envelope? You can just put it all in? Ziploc?
Yeah, that's just basically it. Yeah, just a couple of Q-tips. No, it's much more elaborate than that. And they want to know, obviously, like what your diet has consisted of, and mm-hmm. you report all of that along with the samples that you provide.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Are you going to share the results?
I am.
Yeah. Now, another criticism that some people level at this is that it's just kind of a rehashed version of the Lamarckian model.
Mm-hmm.
And this, of course, goes back to 19th century Jean-Baptiste Lamarck, who had this theory of evolution that incorporated the then popular idea that organisms could pass on adaptive traits that they acquired during their lifetimes.
Mm-hmm.
The classic example of this is a giraffe is trying to eat the leaves at the top of the tree,
mm-hmm.
so he strains his neck. And then the offspring that those giraffes have then has a longer neck
mm-hmm.
because the parent organisms strained their neck. It's a little more involved than that, but it was a popular theory for a while, and then came Darwin's theory that is similar but more nuanced, and then Lamarck faded into the background.
It's true, although Lamarck has enjoyed a resurgence as of late. So, you know, to me, it's just not reconsidering, you know, evolution and saying let's throw out the baby with the bathwater.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just saying what other things are going on.
Yeah, and I also want to add that I think understanding the hologenome, having a thorough understanding of the hologenome, is of course what we're going to need if we're going to ever teleport people across the room or across the planet or to another world, right?
Because I was waiting for that joke.
Yeah, because you've seen the fly. The whole deal there is, oops, he accidentally got his DNA spliced with the fly DNA,
mm-hmm.
and then monstrous consequences occur in Cronenberg's wonderful film. And even, I remember at an early age watching it and knowing, well, you know, we have like, you know, things living in our eyebrows. And then later on, well, we have all these things living in our gut. And then when you start looking at this fact that we are only 10% of us, it really complicates. You'd have to teleport not just this one organism, but
mm-hmm.
all of these organisms and have it all come out on the other side completely intact and working order without any sailors, you know, stuck in part of the ship. In the walls.
That's right. You want the ship to be fairly intact.
Yeah.
And not have appendages sticking out.
Yeah, now I'm drawing in other teleportation sci-fi films. But anyway, you get my point. It really complicates and changes what we think about when we think about who we are.
I just like that I went to the place of U-Biome and you went to that place.
That's how it goes. All right, hey, before we close out, let's call the robot over. We haven't really been doing much listener mail. And we tried to make it up to him with a whole episode, but we really need to have regular interaction with the robot if we want to maintain a healthy relationship with our technology.
Yeah, and put that oil can away.
Exactly. All right, we heard a lot from listeners on our Uncanny Music episode about the science of uncanny music. Why does scary or creepy or weird music have this effect on us? Is it cultural? Is it something innate? And here's just one of the responses. This is B from Boston writing and says, "Hi, Blow Your Mind team. Your talk about why music gives us chills brings to mind a little-known neurological quirk. There are plenty of people who, despite loving music and feeling emotionally stirred by it, never experience actual chills. I've been a musician my whole life. But I always assumed that when people said, the music gave me chills, it was a melodramatic figure of speech. I've been brought to tears by music before and felt completely rocked by powerful passages, but never once have I ever felt a tingle. It wasn't until stumbling on articles about the phenomenon that I learned that these claims of chills are real. Meanwhile, my boyfriend was shocked to think that music could be experienced without these sensations. Since this discovery, I've done a few impromptu surveys of friends and coworkers. In all of these environments, the vast majority of people do get chills, but a steady 10%-ish have shyly conceded that they have also never felt them. The brain is a funny thing. I have no idea what makes some of us chill haves and have-nots, but I would love to learn more about it. Did you see anything about this side of things in your research? Love the show, and thanks for all you do. I'd say that did not pop up in our research, but it does make me want to explore the chills as a singular topic at some point in the future. Like, really get into goose flesh, really get into chill bumps, really get into pins and needles.
Yeah,
I guess pins and needles is different.
But it's the still, I think it's the same sensation, right? You're on pins and needles, you're goose flesh, you're alert.
Yeah.
It is a very interesting question as to why we would all of a sudden look like plucked chickens. And there's a lot more to it. Obviously, there's some holes in the research. People mm-hmm. aren't exactly sure why, but that's a good topic to cover. And we got so many good emails about that episode. People sent us a lot of great links too,
yes.
to movies that had been recut with scary music, like Mrs. Doubtfire.
Yes, Mary Poppins, of course.
The
Poppins one, where it turns it into a horror film by just changing around the music and the scenes.
Which is easy to do with that movie, because if you look at it now, it actually, you know, because it's like foggy old London, it has this sort of ominous feeling to it, just mm-hmm. in the tones, the gray tones.
Well, I love the argument that she was actually a Time Lord, you know, like the Doctor Doctor Who.
Yes. Yeah. There are many different ways to recast things given the context of the music.
All right. Well, hey, if you want to get in touch with us, you can find us in a number of places. First and foremost, go to stufftoblowyourmind.com. That is our website. All the podcasts are up there. All the podcasts. Not just the ones that are on iTunes, but the backlog going back through the centuries.
The hidden ones.
Yes. And then that's where we do our blog posts, our video show up there. Everything we do, that's the mothership. But you can also find us on social media. Facebook, we do a lot there. Twitter, you can find us there as well. Tumblr, we're always feeding that thing. And, of course, you can find us on YouTube as Mind Stuff Show.
And if you want to share your thoughts with us about today's episode or really any other episodes, you can always drop us a line, and you can do so at blowthemind@discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union, a savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.